Thanks for downloading this IMSA Radio podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by visiting IMSAradio.com or search for IMSA Radio wherever they get their podcasts.
The Michelin Countdown to Green on IMSA Radio.
Hello everybody and welcome along to Michelin Countdown to Green as we're getting ready for the Northeast Grand Prix. I've suddenly moved us to the wrong coast. It's John Hindhoff here in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre, and in the next half an hour or so, joined by Cher Adam, our VP Racing Field Pit and Paddock Reporter, and Jeremy Shaw, we'll go through the full grid for the Northeast Grand Prix for the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. We'll hear from our two pole position sitters as well. Yes, only two. The explanation for that will come in a wee moment. And we'll be hearing John Doonan talking about the state of the series. That officially comes up a little bit later on in the year, but the president of IMSA took some time out to speak to us yesterday, so we'll squeeze that into the next half an hour. And of course we'll have our Porsche keys to the race. That's all to come in the Michelin Countdown to Green. But first of all, let's bring in Jeremy Shaw alongside me here in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre as we look at the season so far and what we've got left. Jeremy, at this time of year, generally speaking, even in those that can remember a normal year, this is, in the sports parlance, this is the money part of the season. Races come thick and fast. It's no different this year. In fact, in some ways, it's more difficult because of the situation and having to squeeze various races in into the calendar. How are we standing as we've got just the GT cars, of course, coming in into this weekend?
Yeah, you're right. Things have been shuffled around, but you're right. This is always a busy part of the season. We had the two races back to back at Watkins Glen. In a normal season, as you say, I can't remember those either. We would go directly from Watkins Glen to Canadian Tire Motorsport Park, you know, the following week. So instead of making a trip north of the border, we just stayed where we were at Watkins Glen. And then, as usual, here we are now, 2 weeks later at Lime Rock Park. So there's a lot of great racing here for the fans in the northeast, as you say. But this is round five then for both GTLM and GTD in the season-long championship. It's also round four, so halfway also, in the GTD WeatherTech Sprint Cup Championship as well. Look at the points in GTLM. Well, it's the Corvette of Antonio Garcia and Jordan Taylor have got a pretty handy, almost 200 point advantage over their teammates, which either do or don't score points from qualifying yesterday. Can't get to the bottom of that one, but in any case, it's almost 200 points. But not far behind in third place, in fact, just a few points behind in third place, is Cooper McNeil, who is doing the full season in the Sprint Cup, so in the lone Porsche. So, but yeah, the main interest certainly is in GT Daytona. In the overall championship, after qualifying was taken into account yesterday, because there's 35 points for the pole. Not for pole position, but the fastest in GTD in the point scoring session. It's ridiculously complicated. For the fourth time this season, though, the number 14 car of Jack Hawksworth was fastest in that session. And in actual fact, just looking at how many points have been scored in qualifying by each of the teams, they've actually scored 20 more points than anybody else in GTD during the regular season championship. The fastest, the max score yesterday moved them up from 11th up a couple of positions in the championship, now just 1 point behind Catherine Legg in the Porsche after all sorts of, you know, disappointing results during the races for the number 14 team. But it is Bill Oblin and Robbie Foley who lead, having won each of the two most recent full season races, those being at Mid-Ohio, it seems an age ago, doesn't it, and the Watkins Glen 6 hours. They've got 1,318 points to the 1,256 of Roman De Andres and Ross Gunn in the Aston Martin Flanders for Heart of Racing team. So that's a 62-point edge, or in old money, it would be 6 points, which sounds a heck of a lot closer than 62 in my book. And then 40 points behind them in third position is Brian Stellars and Madison Snow. So it's really, really tight there.
And what you're talking about there, Jeremy, is you're talking about a couple of positions finishing, because as you're saying, 60 and 40, it would have been 6 and 4. So you're actually talking about the difference between probably two or three places in the finishing order.
Indeed so. So it's a lot closer than it kind of looks if you see those big old numbers. And in Sprint Cup, same sort of story. It's pretty close there as well. 10:34 for the Heart of Racing team Aston Martin. Roman De Andres and Ross Gunn lead the points table coming into this fourth race to the 10:09. So just 25 points difference between back to Frankie Montecalvo in the number 12 Vassar Sullivan Lexus. Then in third position, 103 points behind them, is the number 14 team of Aaron Tielitz and Jack Horsworth, who of course won the most recent round at Watkins Glen, the WeatherTech 240 last time out just a couple of weeks ago. So we've had three Sprint Cup races. The first one was won by the Turner Motorsport BMW, Robbie Foley and Bill Orban. They lined fourth in the points, 30 behind Aaron Tielitz and Jack Horsworth. The second race, which was Detroit, was won by the Aston Martin, that team's first win, and then a lot most recently for the number 14 Lexus of Hawksworth and Tielitz. So it's very, very much open there. And it's been just so close between all the manufacturers. It's been fantastic, hasn't it?
It really has. And we were talking, I think, less than a tenth between the top six or seventh. I don't mean between each of those places. I mean, when you added up all the bits and pieces, it was a half a tenth here, a quarter of a tenth there, a fraction of a tenth, hundredths and thousandths of a second when we were looking at those. Shea Adam, a small but perfectly formed entry list here. Anything that stuck out to you when the entry list came out, what, a week or so ago?
Well, the big story this weekend is there is no Mercedes in the field. Allegro Motorsport pulled out of this event, citing sponsorship issues, interestingly enough. So no Michael De Cesato and Daniel Morad running, and no Mercedes being represented at this field at all. But the good news is we should have two Mercedes when we come back to Road America, because Gilbert will be back running with us again. They made their debut at the last race, but Lime Rock was never in their intent to run this year. Just a preview season for them this year and then a full season next year. But we do have the three GTLM cars, 13 cars in the GTD category, only one team running two cars, that being Vassar Sullivan, the same story for the entire year through. And we did have a little bit of an issue this morning for the Vassar Sullivan car, number 12, Zach Veach, diving down the inside of Catherine Legg going into turn one in morning warm-up. The two cars making contact and slight damage sustained to both vehicles. The 12 actually able to drive back to the pit lane. The 88 needing to come back on a flatbed, so not a great start for the Porsche. But as I understand it, the drivers have communicated, and not just in sign language or with four-letter words, but actually talked in the paddock.
But I have seen Catherine Legg's Christmas card list, and Zach isn't on it anymore.
No, exactly. But that's okay, because her partner's name is Zach, so she still has a Zach in her life.
Okay, that's fine. that all sounds good. Shea Adam will be patrolling the pits and the paddock as our VP Racing Fuel reporter to make sure that she stays in contact with all of the teams. As I said, it's a small but perfectly formed field. We'll have our Porsche keys to the race. We'll hear from our two pole sitters. But before we do that, here on the Michelin Countdown to Green, let's check where your favourite is as Jeremy Shaw runs down the grid.
Yeah, the North East Grand Prix, then, as we just said, it is round five in the regular season championship for both GTLM and GTD, around four of the WeatherTech Sprint Cup. 16 cars then in total, 13 GTDs and the three GTLMs. At the back will be car number 44, that's the Magnus with Archangel Acura NSX GT3. It'll be started by John Potter, alongside him Rob Ferriel in the number 88 Team Hardpoint EBM Porsche 911 GT3R. Row 7 at the grid, Misha Goitberg, number 19, the GRT Grasser Racing Team Lamborghini Huracan GT3, alongside the Compass Racing Acura NSX GT3, car number 76, started by Jeff Kingsley. The similar car for Gradient Racing, car number 66, will line up 12th with Till Bechtelsheimer. And ahead of him on the rear, a guy who has been used to driving Acuras over the last couple of seasons and actually has the lap record here in qualifying in an Acura, is Trent Hindman. But of course this weekend, driving the number 16 Wright Motorsports Porsche 911 GT3R, he will start from the 11th position. Robbie Foley, winner of the most recent race in the overall championship, is car number 96, that's the Turner Motorsport BMW M6 GT3, alongside Zachary Robichaud, the winner here last time out, that was 2 years ago, car number 9 for Pfaff Motorsports, another Porsche. The fourth row of the grid is Madison Snow, the number 1 Paul Miller Racing Lamborghini Huracan GT3. Alongside him on the grid for Vassar Sullivan in car number 12 in the Lexus RCF GT3 is Frankie Montecalvo. Third fastest qualifier in GTD is Richard Highstand, number 39 Carbon with Peregrine Racing Audi. And alongside him on the grid, because there's only three GTLM cars, but the second fastest qualifier in GTD is Aaron Tielitz, the number 14 Vassar Sullivan Lexus RCF. But on the pole position, a brilliant run yesterday. The team's first pole position, and they are leading the Sprint Cup points coming into this round. The heart of racing team, Aston Martin Vantage GT3, car number 23, the youngster from Canada, is Roman De Angelis. Tommy Milner will start in the third position. That's the Corvette Racing Chevrolet Corvette C8R number 4. That car had an engine change after qualifying, so moved back to the third position behind Cooper McNeil, number 79 WeatherTech Racing Proton Competition Porsche 911 RSR 19. But on the pole position again for the second straight race, the eighth time in his career, equaling the total tally in the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship of his teammate Antonio Garcia. On the pole position then, in car number 3 for Corvette Racing, is going to be Jordan Taylor.
So that's how they'll line up for the IMSA Northeast Grand Prix, which gets underway in under 30 minutes' time. We're in the Michelin countdown to green. So you heard about Aston Martin and Corvette on pole position. Let's hear from the two drivers who put in those pole position times. We'll hear from Corvette in a moment, but first let's go to Aston Martin and Roman De Angelis.
First pole position for Roman De Angelis, and you did it in quite some style at Lime Rock Park. You didn't need a lot of laps to get the Aston to the front of the field. So what is it about the car that seems to complement this track?
Honestly, coming in, we didn't expect the car to be too strong here. I think we're a really good car for a high-speed track, a Watkins Glen, a Road America. Obviously, we didn't go to Mosport, but a track like that, I think the car would be really great. So, did not expect much of this race, but we also didn't expect much at Detroit. So seems to be a little bit of an opposite of what we think. We're just able to put it all together today. The team worked really hard in the first few practice sessions. We've never been here before. Me or Ross have never driven the circuit before. So it was a bit of a tough learning curve to say, but I'm really happy to get the pole. It's been a really tough week. So happy to get a pole position and really happy for the team as well. They really deserve it. You know, we had a win, we've had seconds, we've had thirds. So one of the last things we needed to check off was a pole and maybe down the road a championship. So we're trying to tick all those boxes.
Yeah, you guys are doing a really good job of putting together a potentially championship winning season. What's it been like to work with Harder Racing this year and Ross?
It's been amazing. Last year I had a really good season coming into the team. It was actually really, really worked out great. I was with, obviously, the same team, and we had the new Aston at the time that we weren't too familiar with. So a lot of learning personally and a lot of learning with the car. So, you know, the growth as a team it was nice to come into a team where you weren't the only one growing, a little bit less pressure. Obviously, Ian, who's a role model and also a really good friend, has brought me on board here, really helped me as well. Made a few mistakes last year and, you know, always, you know, had the hand on the shoulder and helped me push forward. So, now coming into my second season, I just wanted to put everything together and so did the team. And they have, I think we all have, you know, Ross is a great addition to the team. Got on really well with him early on. I feel like brothers already. So that's, it's always good to have a teammate when it's like that. And I, you know, I've been really fortunate to be around Ian, also Darren, and Ross. So really good teammates. The team's been phenomenal. We've been executing, I think, like no one else. So it's a good group, and I think we'll continue to do impressive things.
You guys did a bit of tire conservation in the Friday practices and then in qualifying too. If the race is wet, what's that going to mean for you guys?
Yeah, it's going to be, I think if it's wet, it doesn't mean too much, but if it's dry, you know, we have a bit more, you know, not to say we're going to do something much different than everyone else, depending on the situation, but something happens or, you know, the race is dramatically different than what we think, we have that option to go to another new set. So that's something I think is pretty important in a track like Lime Rock, where you're dropping off, you know, upwards of 2 seconds a lap. You know, I got in the car this morning after Ross went in, and I was pretty shocked to, you know, to what extent the tires degraded after, you know, 30 minutes. So a new tire is a big difference here. So to have that option in the worst case is a really good thing.
Roman, congrats on your first pole position. First of many, I'm sure. And good luck in the race.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Another pole position for Jordan Taylor. You're equal with your teammate, Antonio Garcia, but there is a slight advantage to you starting this race as opposed to Antonio, because you've started a race from overall pole before. How much is that going to help you knowing what to do when there is nothing in front of you?
Yeah, I think it's going to be kind of odd. It's been a few years since we've done anything from an overall point of view. So I guess, yeah, it'll be a bit of a comeback kind of feeling from a couple of years past, but it's in one aspect, it's nice to have, you know, no prototype, so you don't have to worry about the traffic. But at the same time, I think it's going to ramp up the intensity of the race, just with it being just GT cars and having to be flat out, you know, pretty much the whole race. So I think starting up front is going to be an advantage. It's a tough track to pass on. So hopefully we can keep it there.
How much more difficult is things going to get necessarily if it does start to rain, particularly toward the middle to the end of the race? Because the GT3 cars with ABS, they've got a little bit of a hands up on you guys in wet conditions.
Yeah, it'll be tricky. We got a little bit of wet running here yesterday, and there's definitely some water that builds up in some sections of the track where the track cambers. So I think starting up front, if it's wet, as an advantage is having a clear view in front of you. And kind of, I guess we'll kind of see when the rain comes, but so far the C8R has been performing well in the wet. Antonio was able to win the race at the end of Road America when it started raining. And, we've had some other events, over the past year in the wet where the cars performed well. So, I think we'll be pretty strong no matter what the conditions are.
Lime Rock's a pretty special track to you. Back in 2013, it was the site of a year's hard work of culmination. What's it like to come back and race here again?
Yeah, it's nice. It's amazing. It's been so long. It's been 8 years. It feels like it was almost like yesterday when we were here last. And racing here back in Skip Barber days, back in like 07, 08, brings back a lot of memories. So it's nice to be back. It's good to have the fans back here. A lot of people, you know, yesterday were mentioning how they used to watch my dad race here as well back in the GTP days. So it's definitely a historic place for sports car racing in America. So to come back here and get pole, and hopefully contend for the victory today is pretty special.
Thanks, Jordan. Good luck.
Thank you.
Shea Adam, our VP Racing Fuel Pit and Paddock reporter, asking the questions of Jordan Taylor there, and before that, Roman De Angelis, both of whom, Jeremy, have worked very hard to be where they are. De Angelis really now, having come through some of the IMSA development series, really beginning to find his feet and establish himself in this form of racing.
Yeah, very cool to see. I mean, you know, he's the youngest driver in the field, actually by three years. Next youngest, I think, is a fellow Canadian, Jeff Kingsley, at 23. Roman, just 20 years of age, turned 20 back in February. But his talent has been evident right from the first time we saw him. You know, a champion, of course, for Kelly Moss in the Porsche GT3 Cup Series. Got a lot of success in the Porsches. But he's really gelled with his Aston Martin Heart of Racing team effort, and you know, he's really coming to the fore, and it's super to see. He does work super hard. He doesn't come from a massively wealthy background. He's worked super hard and he's got a great personality to go with it. And, you know, an emotional week for him. He, I don't think he mentioned it in that interview, but Shay was saying earlier on, his grandfather sadly passed away this week. So, you know, he's, you know, very, very much got that on his mind. And what a great way to begin this weekend from the pole position.
And Shay, Jordan Taylor there, no stranger to success. It's a bit of a different season for everybody at Corvette. And I say this with much respect to WeatherTech, but they don't have the competition that they were expecting. It's the swan song for the C8R in its current format, but they're making the best of it, and clearly they're still enjoying their racing in the internecine competition that they have between the two cars.
Very much so, and don't count Cooper out just quite yet. He's had different co-drivers so far this year. He had three at Daytona that he then had two different ones at Sebring. So Cooper is the only car in that WeatherTech Porsche going for the championship. And yes, a long way back, a lot of work to do. But because he's so far out and he's starting second on the grid, remember, he can take chances that Jordan Taylor can't, defending this championship lead. The Corvette, as you rightly say, the C8R running in its swan song season as a GTLM or GTE Pro car over here, yes, in the States, but we don't know if that's going to be it for the C8R as far as the global running is concerned. So it is sort of an odd situation for this year. Corvette definitely looking at the championship, but watch out because you never know what that Porsche can come up with. They've already won the 12 Hours of Sebring. Who's to say they don't sneak a few more wins away from the factory team this year?
Yeah, John DeKey, Sportscar 365, reporting the potential for a dedicated build of a Corvette for GT3, which we haven't seen before, but not before 2023 or 2024, perhaps, at the earliest. Jordan Taylor, Jeremy, pretty much a poster child for American dynastic road racers.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, he and his brother, they've scored the most wins in the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship days. 22 now for Jordan. Second on the list overall is his brother Ricky on 19. Ricky not racing, of course, this weekend. Just a very quick note about that Porsche. The balance of performance coming into this weekend, the Porsche's been able to shed 20 kilos. The Corvette added 10 kilos. And as Shay was saying, this is the first time here for Matthew Jaminet, so he's got a pretty steep learning curve, particularly having not got many laps yesterday due to the weather, and then the fact that Cooper, of course, qualified the car and put it into the car wash at the left-hander in the very, very wet session there. But yeah, Jordan Taylor, you know, Shay talked about it. The last time he was here was 2013. That, of course, was in a prototype back in the Rolex GT days when he clinched the championship, Lime Rock, that year in the Grand Am Rolex GT Championship. Was the final round of the series, and he clinched the championship here at Lime Rock with Max Angelelli, of course, for his father's team. So it's amazing how time flies past, doesn't it? 8 years since Jordan was last here, but he'd be looking to carry on those winning ways.
Oh, it seems like a moment, an absolute moment or two. Still to come in the Michelin Countdown to Green, we'll have our Porsche keys to the race. But first, yesterday, we got the opportunity to speak with President of IMSA, John Doonan. So I asked him to start with how much of a challenge it had been to put together this year's calendar amid the challenges caused by the global pandemic.
For sure. As we continue to work with each of the promoters, lot depended on the individual state mandates, but thanks to Skip Barber, Steve Sewell, the new ownership group here at Lime Rock, we worked with the state. They were able to reopen as a facility back here. And as you say, John, the rest of the 2021 campaign, all the way out to California in September, and then ultimately Motul Petit Le Mans at Michelin Raceway, we're looking really good to complete the full season.
Now, not content with managing to do that in the face of a global pandemic, and let's not forget that IMSA was back racing in July last year as well, which was extraordinary. You've also managed to come together with your partners under Pierre Fillon at the ACO and the FIA to confirm global prototype convergence. And not just talk about it, there's now a framework, John. There are four pillars of convergence on performance. That's an extraordinary feat that you've managed to get done. Does that give you hope for the future and from 2023 onwards?
It makes the hair stand up on my arms. What it's going to do for our fans who've wanted it for so long, it answers a question that our 18 plus auto manufacturers around the world that are competing in endurance sports car racing have asked for a long time. A massive amount of work by so many people for many years, seeing this dream become reality. And then ultimately, you're right, John, it came down to really a technical solution and getting the two platforms built to different regulations to a place where we believe they can compete together starting in 2023 at the Rolex 24 at Daytona.
John, we've long known about the technical excellence that IMSA has had and now being able to use the facilities of NASCAR and some of the number crunching that goes on for balance of performance and equalization nowadays would put the Apollo Moon program to shame. Are you confident that those four areas, which are aerodynamics, which bizarrely is probably the easiest one to sort out because there's a parallel program at wind shear here in the US and in Europe at the Sauber wind tunnel, a coefficient of acceleration effectively, a braking coefficient as well, and you know all of these things have had to come together. Are you confident it will deliver for both of the series concerned here, both the ACO and you guys at IMSA?
Yeah, there's no question that we have confidence given the work of the technical teams. You mentioned our great technical team led by Simon Hodgson and Matt Curdock, our engineers John, David, and Bill, putting a lot of work in to get the BOP where we are today. You go across the Atlantic to Terry Bouvet and his team. They worked in collaboration to find answers to those four pillars. There's a lot of detail yet to be worked out, but I think the confidence level among the two technical teams, as well as all the manufacturers that have already committed to LMDH or to LMH, gave us the ability to sit down at a table, come to an agreement that we know that the two platforms are different, but that they can coexist and put on an amazing race no matter where it is in the world.
Are you then confident, John, that there will be some interest? I know there's interest from what I would call the IMSA manufacturing side and the LMDH or the DPI 2.0 side of the equation to go and race in some of the European races. And of course, Le Mans is on a lot of people's lists, although interesting, potentially not BMW. But what are you hearing from the other manufacturers that you've talked to, your Toyotas, your Glickenhaus, Peugeot? Peugeot don't have a North American presence anymore, but certainly Glickenhaus do. They're based not too far away from where you're standing at the moment, and Toyota are a huge concern. Are they going to want to come and play at as early as Daytona and the Rolex 24 in 2023?
The beauty of all of the discussions that have happened over the last two, almost 3 years has been the fact that I think at some point there have been 16 manufacturers at the table. Several of those, as we know, have made commitments to either LMH, the hypercar program, or LMDH. So they're all showing their plans by their actions and making an announcement. We continue to have conversations with many of them. Many of them have wanted very badly to have convergence confirmed. And now that that's the case, I think you're going to see more and more meetings, more and more interest. And we would welcome those manufacturers that you mentioned, Toyota, Peugeot, to come over here as manufacturer partners of the ACO, but hopefully as a place in North America where they can showcase their road car products in front of our amazingly loyal and enthusiastic fan base.
It's John Doonan, president of IMSA, speaking to us yesterday about the future and convergence. More to come on that. Stellantis, the group name for Peugeot, Fiat Chrysler, huge brand now, and some thought that they might take one of their North American brands and share the Peugeot 72, the 9x8, the Peugeot 72 that was unveiled recently, and rebrand it with a North American manufacturer's badge. There is a full-size mock-up of that Peugeot 72. 72, by the way, being the departmental number for Le Mans and Le Sart, of course. That's at Monza this weekend, which is our next coverage on the Radio Show Limited network of channels. And we'll have the 6 hours of Monza tomorrow, Sunday, with Johnny Palmer and Bruce Jones. Let's take a look as we wind up our Michelin countdown to green with our Porsche keys to the race. We've talked about this ever since we came on the air, Jeremy, but let's say it again. It's under a mile and a half around, so track position here is key.
It is. It's tight. It's pretty sinuous around here. It's not easy to make a pass. Not easy to make passes when cars are so closely matched at the best of times. But it's particularly tough to pass around here. So yeah, track position is a big factor.
And to that, then, timing of the pit stops. You can live or die by that, Jeremy. And sometimes it might not be within your gift. If you have to stop, you have to stop. And if you get caught on the wrong side of a safety car, you're just going to have to take that. But you may drop a lap or maybe a couple of laps.
Well, you know, if you come in and make a quick stop, you might be able to get out. If you're not too far behind the leader, you might be able to get out without losing a lap. But it'll be awfully tight and probably unlikely. So, timing of the pit stops is going to be critical. I would expect during this race two pit stops for GTD, two, possibly three for GTLM. And that might come down more to tyre wear, perhaps, even than needing the fuel.
Well, and that was one of my points. And the tyres. We saw in the Michelin Pilot Challenge that, yeah, you can stretch your fuel here, but the Michelin tyres, particularly in the heat of the day, as we saw earlier on, they've been hanging out, they've been doing a great job, but they're not going to give the performance and the lap time that they would at the start of the stint.
No, there is a fair bit of drop off, I think, in terms of time, and it goes off fairly quickly. So yeah, how they allocate their tyres during this race, they've got plenty of sets coming into the weekend. There is an allocation. I think it's 10 sets, isn't it, for GTLM and 6 for GTD they had coming into this two-day weekend. But you saw, you know, when and how you use those, it could be very, very critical. And particularly, of course, that all gets thrown out of the window if we have rain.
Yes, and the weather. Before we talk about that, no mistakes I've got written here. Penalties here really hurt. A drive-through is bad. A stop and hold, Jeremy, is pretty disastrous.
Yeah, that'll kill your race, absolutely. A stop and hold of any sort whatsoever is going to put you more than a lap down, and possibly two, depending on how long the stop and hold is. So, yes, avoiding penalties is even more crucial here than at most of the tracks on the schedule. And we saw that in the Michelin Pilot Challenge race just a little bit earlier on this afternoon. One of the teams was actually able to come back from that penalty, but then they had other issues later on which put them back again. So, yeah, things can change very, very quickly here at Lime Rock Park.
And we'll round up our Michelin countdown to green with Shea Adam, our VP Racing Field Pit and Paddock reporter, who's also watching the weather. When it rains here, it rains hard. Michelin rain tyres are pretty good, Shea, but lightning in the air, and this time of year you do get electrical storms. That could call a halt to things.
Yes, very much so. We are under a stage one warning right now, which means that there is weather within a 30-mile vicinity. And that storm is moving up from the southwest, and it's heading northeast. Should be over the track fully, my weather radar is now saying, within 30 minutes' time. So not quite enough to finish that first stint.
That could make things very, very interesting indeed. Big crowd on hand here at Lime Rock Park. If you've been listening to us on RS2 at imsaradio.com, remember that is the home for all things IMSA now. imsaradio.com, we've got all of our free archive there, as well as all the schedules for the upcoming IMSA race. And cleverly there, all somehow autocorrect to the time zone in which you find yourself and your browser. Well, if you're listening there and you're outside the US, it's time to go to the live video button, because we've got live and uninterrupted coverage. If they're in the US and you want to watch video, you'll have to wait until 5:30 Eastern this afternoon. That's when the show comes on NBCSN. But for now, it's time to go live on IMSA Radio and IMSA TV.